Here I am, climbing up, feeling great, getting love. Here I go, risk it all, be worth it now, and that's for sure. Watch me as a rocketeer.
All right, episode 27 of Fight Talk Down Under is brought to you by CMBT. Go to cmbt.com.au for all your protein powders, protein bars, pre-workout, all that good stuff. You know, we all love CMBT. They're huge supporters of Aussie MMA, so go to cmbt.com.au and give them some love. We're also brought to you by Nutcare. Recent research has shown that in 2022, most women prefer men who are groomed downstairs. So try Bare Nuts Hair Removal Cream and join the grooming revolution. Go to nutcare.com.au. Use the promo code FIGHTNEWS for 10% off at the checkout. That's nutcare.com.au, promo code FIGHTNEWS. Right, now welcome everyone. We're minus my regular co-host, and of course we can sort of properly announce now he's fighting Khan Offaly at Eternal 70 on September 17th, following the signing of Jack Jenkins to Dana White's Contender Series. So we'll obviously touch on that with him next week when he's back on deck. But we don't want to sort of make everyone suffer through listening to Lockjaw bang on about fights every week. So I've decided to upgrade this week. Of course, I've brought in the newest addition to the UFC flyweight roster. It's of course the Turkish Delight, Shannon Ross. How are you, man?
Yeah, really good. Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me on, and yeah, excited to have a chat.
Yeah, no worries at all. Thanks for stopping by. Now, before we start, I think I might have read in the lead up to your fight on Contender Series that you're not actually Turkish. Is that true? Or can you give us a bit of background on the Turkish Delight nickname?
No, I am Turkish. My dad's Turkish. He's from Cyprus. So it's a small island off Turkey. Half the island is Turkish and half is Greek. But yeah, so I'm half Turkish, half Australian. My mum's Australian. So yeah, I'm half Turkish.
Well, there we go. Put that to bed. So, what's been happening? How's life been since Dana White's Contender Series?
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a whirlwind, mate. I've obviously got back to Australia and been on strict instructions not to do anything. So the first sort of week and a half has been pretty boring for me. Usually I'm flat out, full steam ahead all day, 2-3 sessions and work and the kids and family, and now I've been sitting at home for a week and a half not doing anything, so it's been driving me a little bit crazy. I just got back to work this week, so I'm starting to feel a little bit more sort of in a routine now, so good now.
That's good to hear. So yeah, how are you recovering from surgery and all that stuff?
Yeah, the recovery is going great. Obviously can't train and just can't push it. Got to let that abdomen wall heal up properly and let the body do what it's got to do. So just listening to my doctor and the UFC doctors, what they said. And two more weeks and then we can get back to some rehab and some light training and start moving again. So I'm looking forward to that.
Nice. And of course you had a pretty crazy fight against Vinicius Salvador on Dana White's Contender Series. So, like how much do you remember of the fight itself?
Yeah, I remember the whole fight. I've only watched it back once since. It was probably maybe mid last week and pretty much, sort of played back on the TV exactly how I thought it went in my head. Crazy fight. Obviously got clipped early and then sort of went on autopilot for the first round. And obviously the way I fight is it leaves you open to a 50-50 and things happening. And then the second round, I thought I was clawing it back and I was winning that round pretty convincingly. And then obviously knowing I was down the first round with getting dropped twice, I was trying to put him away. And when you fight like that, it's a risky business, and got clipped again, and that was the end of it. But all the drama before and after, and then coming away with the contract sort of all paid off. So
absolutely. And it was a kind of part of the game plan to sort of press the, when you get that sort of pep talk from Dana White before the show, does that kind of sort of spur you on to sort of fight with a bit more aggression, or was it just kind of just the way the fight sort of played out?
I'm sure it pushed other people to fight more intensely, but I always fight like that. If you you've seen some of my fights and you see how I fight. I don't really take any back steps, and I'm not that sort of fighter to go out there and in the hope not to lose. I'm more going out there to make sure I win. So it's a very different fight when you fight like that. So it's risky, but it's entertaining, and it's what the UFC look for and want to bring to the big stage, and love fans tune in for that. So yeah.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, it turned out for you in the end. But you know, you sort of you touched on some of the craziness sort of pre-fight and post-fight and all that sort of stuff. Like, what are you referring to there? Sort of, do you have some hiccups in training camp and that sort of thing, or sort of how did it all play out?
Oh, mate, pre-fight it was an absolute nightmare. There was I got cut twice over my eye. I popped a rib. It was just keep pressing forward and do what we could do, and then. When we filed for my athlete visa, that ended up getting declined for a sit down interview, like what it does for a lot of athletes. They want you to fly down to the embassy and have a sit down and go over stuff. They set my date for 30 days from when it was filed. That ended up being 2 days after my fight. So that obviously wasn't going to work. And then the UFC and UFC immigration department filed for an emergency non-interview athlete visa. So we had to send down a bunch of paperwork to the Sydney embassy with my passport. That all went down there. That was down there for about 3.5 weeks. It only got approved maybe 4 days before I was, or 5 days before I was supposed to fly out. So the Thursday before I was meant to fly out, it got approved. They sent it back that afternoon on the Thursday. I was meant to fly out Wednesday, and then my passport got lost in the mail. So yeah, Friday didn't get delivered. Saturday, Sunday, it's the weekend. Didn't know what was going on. Monday we call them up. They have no idea where it is. So then it's almost fight week. It's a week and a half out. So I'm trying to stay like as strict as I can with my diet and the training regime and starting to get ready for the weight cut, the water load, all that sort of stuff. And obviously having no passport and no visa means I can't get on a plane and leave the country. So yes, 7 or 8 days out, I'm freaking out. And then we're meant to fly out Wednesday night. I still had no passport. And then Thursday at about 12 o'clock, the UFC was saying they're all pretty much going to cancel me from coming over because they needed to get a new opponent for Vinicius Salvador. And I was like begging for like just give me some more time. Let me see if they can find it today. And then at 3:30 that afternoon, the Steve from the Mullen Diner, Australia Post, called me up, said they'd found it. And then I rushed straight from home, straight to the airport at Brisbane. And he actually left where he went. He went out to Red Bank Plains to get the passport from where it was, and then he met us at the airport. So we had about 20 minutes to spare on the Thursday night before we even got on the plane and boarded. And then, that was all pre-fight. And then we got to LAX. We missed our connecting flight there to go to Vegas because of the immigration line. And then we spent a night in LAX. And then the next day we got a flight into Vegas. And then it was a bit smoother sailing. Then we were there, so it was like, all right, we're here now. There's not really much else that can go wrong. And then obviously the appendicitis kicked off late in the fight weekend, threw us another curveball. So yeah, crazy 20 days all up, I reckon.
Man, that is a bit of everything right there. Like, we've seen the sort of visa issue seems to be a fairly common tale with Australian fighters. We've seen, obviously, Steve Ersig and Justin Tafa have sort of missed their opportunities lately with possibly, some similar sort of tales with the embassy and that sort of thing. But how hard is it to sort of, keep yourself in the right sort of mind frame, sort of, like, to prepare as if you're still fighting when all this madness is unfolding?
Oh, it's extremely hard. Obviously, first and foremost, it's your dream to get to this stage and fight there. So I guess that helps a lot more if it was a smaller tier show or you're fighting locally. A lot of guys just Yeah, I'm out. I'm not cutting weight. I've been, you've been dieting already for however many weeks, and you probably want some food. You're probably stressed to the gills, and a lot of people just they fold and they give up. And but for me, that obviously wasn't an option. Not this time around. It's obviously my dream to get to the UFC, and I had obviously my wife. She was just going absolutely bananas over the passport stuff, and she's on the phone every hour. And like, I think that's what sort of what got us across the line is just having a couple people in your corner that are backing you and pushing you and going to war for you in any other aspect, and letting me do the training and worrying about my stuff, and they're getting the other end done. So yeah, it was pretty hard to stay committed, and but we did, and the passport come through, and then we got there. So
Absolutely. And the appendicitis, like when did that sort of I guess how did that sort of rear its ugly head, and when did that sort of when did that kick off?
yeah, so pretty much we got into the athlete hotel, and I was pretty good for the first few days. I felt really, really good. I still felt like sort of felt fresh from having a few days off after camp and started my water load and all that stuff. And then it was probably the night before the weight cut started. The afternoon, I started feeling a bit sore in the belly and a bit of pain, and I just put it down to just the old, it's the end of fight week, and we're about to cut the weight, and calories have been low this week. We're pretty strict, and we're on chicken and eggs and a bit of spinach, and like you're really, really ramping it up to get that weight off. So, and the water load, I just thought, oh, it's just a bit of stomach pain from that sort of thing. And then it must have been what night? It would have been, yeah, the Sunday night going into the weight cut on Monday. I couldn't sleep at all because my stomach, I was in that much pain, and sort of probably got about 3 or 4 hours sleep before I had to wake up for the weight cut at 5 a.m. So that was pretty hard, and I just thought the same thing, like, yeah, it's just fight week, I'm pretty hungry and my stomach's sore, I've fasted for the last however many hours, 10 or 12 hours, and it's just that sort of fight week thing that's happening. And yeah, then we cut weight, made weight, rehydrated, fueled up, and I felt quite good. I felt quite good all that Monday. And then it was fight day. We went down into the athlete training sort of facility they have in the hotel there, and having a bit of a warm up and a hit out with the team. And I had Ben 10 over with me. He was in South Dakota, so I got him to come out to Vegas and hang out with us for the fight week. He sort of knows all the UFC gist and how they operate, and obviously he's a flyweight, so good to have him there as a training partner and that. And he actually he hopped on my back. We're doing some drilling from the back, and he put a body triangle on and squeezed it. And like, as soon as he squeezed it on, I like let out a bit of a scream. Like, I thought my rib popped, and then he let it off. And then I hopped up, I moved around. I was like, oh, I'm all good. But it was obviously just the pressure deep in the abdomen on that appendix, which sort of gave me that pain. And then, yeah, that was the end of it, fight day. And we went there and we warmed up out the back, and I felt great. And yeah, went out to the cage and had that barn burner of a fight, and then yeah, woke up the next day, and I was in absolute agony and had the cold shakes and the fevers, and I ended up having septicemia in my bloodstream, so I had blood poisoning. And yeah, I didn't really know how bad it was, but since I've been back, I've heard a lot of stories from friends and people saying, like, yeah, people actually die from appendicitis, so having a ruptured appendix. And yeah, one of my good mates' dad's, he passed away 6 years ago from appendicitis. He just thought the same thing. He had stomach pain, and yeah, next day went to the hospital, and then they operated on him, and he ended up passing away. So pretty crazy looking back on it, how risky it was. Yeah.
Absolutely, that's crazy. So it could have been a whole lot worse. But do you think maybe, like during the fight, there was maybe a bit of adrenaline that kind of got you through, with that sort of abdomen pain?
Yeah, like out the back, honestly, before the fight, I felt really good. I felt perfect. I felt really calm. I didn't have any pain in my abdomen or anything at that moment. So I can't really say like it was a hindrance or anything like that, or I even felt it in the fight. It was I felt really, really good. And then, yeah, obviously everyone gets that adrenaline and you get going when you're fighting. So obviously he sort of, I think he threw a few body kicks at me and stuff like that, but yeah, I didn't really feel it in the fight. And yeah, just sort of, it was sort of that night after the fight, I went and had some food with the team and sort of the first burger and can of Coke I'd had in a little while. And straight away I felt quite bloated and quite like, yeah, swollen stomach. Like a couple of hours after, I thought, oh, that's weird. And I started having that fear of like, oh, I've eaten all this shit food and I've got a blocked bear. And then, yeah, woke up the next morning and it was worse again. And then we went and got the CT scan and they said straight away, yeah, you got a ruptured appendix, so you're going in for surgery. So, yeah, pretty eventful sort of 10 days, 12 days sort of thing, yeah.
It's about as eventful as it gets. So, you know, post-fight, yeah. Obviously, you know, Dana White came and saw you, you know, in the ring. Sort of, did you hear from him or the UFC brass sort of after the fight? Did you kind of have any sort of inkling that there might have been a contract coming your way?
No, we didn't. I was obviously pretty devastated by, obviously, first off, losing the fight and it not going to plan how the way we wanted and not getting a contract there and then on the night. And obviously you hear these tales of, yeah, sometimes the losers get a contract if they put on these awesome performances. And we sort of went to the hospital that night, just get the normal check over from the UFC, and I sort of watched it back and I heard Michael Bisping saying, oh, give the guy a contract, it was a crazy fight, and these sort of things. So you got that little bit of hope in the back of your head, but I was pretty upset. And obviously that night had some food and went to bed pretty early, and then woke up the next morning. That's where it all kicked off, with going to the hospital and getting checked in and that sort of thing. And then when I woke up from surgery, I actually had a few missed calls from my manager, and I called Denny Rubenstein back and just to find out what's going on. Is everything all good? And he sort of, yeah, hit me up and goes, bro, these guys have been trying to call me at 4 a.m. in the morning. I said, what guys? He said, Dana and Mick. And I said, what about? He said, they want to sign you. So, yeah, that was pretty good phone call to get out after surgery. And, yeah, everything we went through, and obviously the fight and the pre-fight stuff, and then obviously getting surgery and coming out of that contract sort of made it all worthwhile. So,
yeah, so tell us about that feeling. Like, obviously, this is kind of the culmination of a life's work for you. You know, it's like a dream come true for most fighters to, you know, to sign with the UFC. So, yeah, what was that feeling when you finally, you know, got that call that, you know, the contract was coming your way and you were going to be a UFC fighter? What was it like?
Yeah, it was pretty surreal. Like, it probably took a couple of days to really sink in. So, obviously, when I first found out off my manager, it was... I was not long out of surgery, so I don't know if it was like the pain meds or the anesthesia or whatever it was, but I was actually FaceTiming Denny, and he told me, and I was like, I think I was just laying there in shock, and obviously I couldn't move too much. I was pretty sore, and he's like, are you all right? And I said, like, on the inside, I'm cheering right now, like I'm celebrating, but like on the outside, I just can't show you it. Like, I can't move, and I'm like, feel like my body's absolute cactus, and I was all swollen and blown up from the surgery. So, yeah, then probably took a couple of days, and then obviously I was in hospital for 3 or 4 days after, and then I think once I finally got home and seen the wife and kids and sort of like had a chat with my wife Beck, and the kids, they were all just like celebrating, and that's sort of when it really sort of kicked in, like, yeah, we actually did it after all this hard stuff and all these obstacles. We sort of overcome it, and we finally got to where we said we would get to. And yeah, it was a massive team effort. So yeah, sort of still sinking in now. Like, I'm ready to get to training and start pushing for the debut. So, but I just got to let this heal up and then get back on it. So,
yeah, like you mentioned there, you're still you know, a couple of weeks away from getting back to training. But you know, do you have a date in mind? You sort of got sort of itchy knuckles to get back in there. You know, when do you want to make make that walk?
I would definitely love to get one in before the end of the year. maybe December if there's still opportunities on cards coming up then. If not December, early January, Feb, there's some talks about the UFC coming back over to Australia in early 2023. So if we can't get anything end of the year or real early, definitely Australia. I would love to debut here and fight in front of the home fans and yeah, be around the people that love me and support me and yeah, give back to the fans down here on the main stage. So
Yeah, wouldn't that be an awesome way to do it?
yeah.
Now, do you have you've mentioned there you've had a fair bit of time on your spare time on your hands since you haven't been able to train and work and that sort of thing. So, do you find yourself sort of looking at opponents or sort of looking at the roster and seeing assessing the competition?
Yeah, definitely. There's been a lot of flyweight fights on, and I've been tuning in and watching them all really, really closely. So, yeah, as soon as we get fit and we start training, I'll tell Denny, and he'll hit the UFC up, and might even put a few names out there of guys I'd like to fight. So, as soon as I'm healthy, I'll put some names out there. I'm obviously not scared to say who I want to fight. I want to get healthy and get fit, and then yes. Put some fights together quick, and obviously you can't fight forever, so I want to put them together quick and climb up those rankings. And yeah, I won't be scared to get on the mic and call out who I want next either. So
Absolutely. Like you kind of mentioned there, obviously 33 years old now, so it's sort of I guess kind of a little bit sort of later in the piece than most sort of UFC signings. So do you have like a time scale for your career? Is there sort of do you have a timeline in mind, or are you just sort of trying to get him in as quick as you
No,
can?
like no timeline at all. I'll fight as long as my body lets me. And at the moment, I'm besides like the appendix surgery, which is a little bit out of the blue and a little bit weird. It's obviously not a fight related injury or training injury, but my body is really, really healthy, and I've never had many bad injuries, so I still think I've got a lot of miles in the tank, and I'll fight as long as they let me, and as long as I'm winning and performing and putting on an exciting fight. So, but on the other hand, is I don't want to have one fight every 6, 8, 9 months, that sort of thing. I want to get in, and I want to do things fast, and yeah, not wait around and just be on the roster to be there. I want to be on the roster and sort of, yeah, make moves and smash through it, and yeah, just show the rest of the world like another Australian is capable of doing what the other Aussies have already done. So,
Absolutely, and we'll be at flyweight as well. I've seen on the socials there's been a lot of donut related media on social media.
yeah. So when I was in Vegas, so obviously we booked a couple of days there after the fight to sort of go explore and sort of have a look around Vegas and probably go to a buffet or two, but none of that happened because obviously we're in hospital. And then yeah, the 4 days we had thereafter, I was in a hospital bed. So, and I actually didn't feel like eating any food for about 2 weeks after. I was really had no appetite, and I think all the antibiotics they put through your system, and my stomach was really upset. And yeah, it probably took like even a week after I was back home to sort of get that appetite back. And last time I come back from overseas, one of the boys brought me some of those donuts to the hotel quarantine that I was in COVID. And then I thought, yeah, this is going to be my first sort of treat. I'm going to go back up and get some of those donuts, sort of make it a ritual. So after every international fight, that's what we're doing now.
There you go, and you deserved every bit of it. So, now that you're on the UFC roster, do you plan to keep your day job? Do you plan to sort of do fighting, I guess training on the side, or what's it going to look like?
Yeah, I've had a lot of people ask me this. Yeah, I would absolutely love just to knuckle down and focus on fighting 100%, but obviously being a father and a husband and owning a house and having mortgages and that sort of stuff, I have a lot more overheads than the single man who's just fighting by himself. So, and being entry level into the UFC, that's not going to cover my expenses for the year. So I will work and I'll look at building my team of sponsors. And when we lock in fights, I'll look to take the whole fight camp off instead of like this is the first time in my whole career for this fight I took 4 weeks off. So leading into the UFC debut, I'll probably take 8 or 10 weeks off if I can, and yeah, have some good sponsor backings that I've been building over the years, and yeah, look at it that way. But yeah, for the main thing of still working, yeah, I'll still be working, and I'll still be doing what I usually do. So maybe in a few more negotiation contracts, and we bump up, and we bring more to the table for the UFC, and then we can think about it. But right now, yeah, I'm happy where I'm at. So
Yeah, there you go. And I guess what would that balance be like? If you've got 8 weeks to then just sort of train and I guess that would afford you the opportunity to then go home and sort of see your kids at dinner time and that sort of thing. Was that I guess sort of speak about the balance that that would bring rather than sort of having to work during the day, train at night. You probably get home after the kids go to bed, I'm assuming. So does that sort of
yeah.
what's the benefit of of that sort of family and work balance?
Yeah, it's massive. Like even this fight camp, just the last 4 weeks before the fight, it was a beautiful thing, man. That's it made me really appreciate and love this life of a fighter and an athlete. Like I got to take my little boy to school over those 4 weeks so many times, and I got to pick him up so many times where I'm not usually there or available because I've gone to training before work or I'm at work. And yeah, it was so good to realize, like, and post fight we got this contract, and I'm like, I can do more of this, like give back to my family and be around even more. So that's massive. Like previous fights locally, and I've never had that time off work to know what it's felt like. So doing it this camp, and yeah, knowing I can do it again for the next fights is it's really exciting. And it's like we're at the balance sort of evens out now. I spent all those years not being available and not being there because we're working towards this journey, and now the journey's given back, and I can be around more and give back more. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, how good. And are you allowed to tell us sort of how many fights you've got on the contract? What are they, what they sort of give you?
Yeah, so I think all contender series contract winners get the same thing. It's a three fight deal. So it's all built into your contender series contract. When you sign that contract, if you win a contract on the night, it just comes in the back end of your contender contract. So it's like a extension sort of thing. So yeah, three fights. I think it's over 16 or 20 months or something like that. And yeah, obviously perform good and win those and be exciting for the fans. You get to sign another contract, but you lose and you're boring. You're sort of on your way. So, I'm already ticking off most of the boxes there. So, confident in the next one.
Yeah, I don't think you're in too much danger of being in a boring fight, to be honest.
Nah, yeah, I just can't help it. It's like my coaches are having heart attacks and going mental at me, and I'm sort of swinging away. And but yeah, it's not good for the coaches and the team, but I guess it's just how I fight and how I like to perform, and sort of love pressure fighting. And yeah, next time we'll see what we can do. But yeah, I'm not going to stop being exciting. I go there to win, and that's all I'm doing. If I have to die on my shield, that's what I'll do. But yeah.
Well, yeah, it's gotten you this far. So, yeah, what's it like for your family? What's your wife and kids like, watching you fight? Do they find it sort of stressful? Do the kids sort of understand what they're looking at?
Yeah, the kids are the younger kids are seeing it more and more now because I've got a 3 and a 6 year old, and the older ones who are 14 and 16, they sort of get the gist of it and understand that, yeah, dad's been an Australian champion and now he's going international and he's going to Vegas and stuff like that. And yeah, my wife, she's supremely confident and calm every time I fight. She's probably the calmest and most confident person sort of in the room or backstage or wherever we are. She just sees the hard work and what I put in, so she's confident in that. She gets more nervous when my teammates and stuff fight because she worries about them more. So it's a bit weird to see, but yeah, we're both super confident. So
Awesome. Are you much of a fight fan yourself? Do you do you watch a lot of fights when you're sort of not involved?
Yeah, I do. Obviously, I try to watch as much as I can. Obviously, I try to get around to the local events or tune in on Fight Pass when Eternal's on there, and obviously try to catch all the UFC. And now I've got even a closer eye on the division I'm in with the flyweights, and I try to pick up and watch all those fights, and obviously tune into all the big name fights as well. Obviously, Aldo fought on the weekend, and he's been a sort of superstar for years and years. And yeah, it's I try to watch as much as I can when I can get that balance at the family right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of the hard thing, you know. It's a struggle for all of us dads, really, trying to watch fights on a Sunday yeah. morning, Sunday afternoon. It's a tough thing. So I often watch them after the fact. But did you catch Jose Aldo's fight on the weekend? It proved to be a bit underwhelming in the end. But did you have a look?
Yeah, I did. Obviously, Aldo has been a favorite of mine for a long time. Obviously, yeah, I don't know if the altitude got a lot of the guys up there and what they've been saying, but the fight didn't sort of plan out how I thought it was. I had a multi on and I picked Aldo, and he was the first one to kill my multi, so I was a bit devoed there. But Aldo's getting a bit older, and yeah, he's been fighting for a really long time, and I don't know if it's the bantamweight cut and the Utah altitude, but yeah, it sort of was a bit of a slow fight. And but you've seen that with, like, Leon said the same thing. He said after round one he couldn't get going, and took him four and a bit rounds to find that head kick. So
yeah, absolutely. How crazy was that? Like, he obviously did get going, with a minute to go there, but it was an incredible boil over there. What did you make of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely phenomenal for Leon. Like, the guy's story, I feel like I relate, like, a lot to what he's been through and my journey over the last few years, like, going overseas and then COVID and then losing 20 grand in my last fight to get home and sort of all these setbacks and hurdles. And I feel like I can relate when it feels like everything is against you, and then you kick this goal, and obviously he's just kicked Kamara in the head and knocked him out and won the world title, and I've just won my first contract to the UFC. So it's like, man, the head kick, the setup, the jab cross to the same high head kick was beautiful. It was beautiful technique, and it was just smooth and sharp, and yeah, it got the job done.
Absolutely. That's probably how you would probably describe Leon Edwards, smooth and sharp. You know, he's just a beautiful technical fighter to watch, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's just really crisp, really smooth. Nothing's forced. He's really in tune, and obviously he's the welterweight champion now, so he's got the skills to back it, and he's got himself there, and he's obviously overcome all those hurdles that he's had, and he's never shied away. He's just kept pushing and believed in himself, and had that corner sort of rearing him on at that last round and just telling him to get going and stop feeling sorry for himself. And yeah, I guess he did that, and yeah, he got what he wanted. So
yeah, how good was that? Just the corner just imploring him to just have a go, wake up sort of thing. Like, is that how you sort of like your sort of corners to be? Would you sort of kind of respond to sort of coaching like that, or you sort of operate a bit differently?
Yeah, like, I'm pretty cruisy in the corners. I like to just get my recovery in and go back out to the next round feeling pretty fresh. But for me, I don't think I ever need my cornerman to hype me up and get me going, because I'm already going that much. But if the need comes, I'm sure someone will, and yeah, they'll get me going and tell me why I'm there. And it's real cool to see from an outside's perspective, like, for the fans to get to see that, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess you sort of touched on the altitude there being a bit of an issue in Utah. Obviously, Paulo Costa and Luke Rockhold had a bit of an issue yeah. there. Have you done any sort of training yourself or fights or anything like that at altitude? Have you sort of experienced that?
No, not at all. Obviously, a lot of my career's been here in Australia, and then I fought in Abu Dhabi and then Vegas, and I've been pretty lucky in that aspect. So yeah, I haven't really felt or touched on the altitude stuff. So I can't really say what it's like or how effective it is, but you hear a lot of it, and you hear a lot of guys going out early and acclimating and getting that stuff done. And if I ever have to have a fight at altitude, I'll obviously touch base with a professional that understands it a lot more than me and take their advice. There's nothing wrong with reaching out and asking for help for someone in the right field, and as a professional, that's what we all should do. So I think these, like, we've seen it with, I think, Cain Velasquez, like, years ago, right? He went out to Mexico, but he only went out the week, and Verdum had been there for 2, 3 months before, and then we've seen how that fight, like, played out. Verdum was looking great, and Cain faded and then gets guillotined. It's like, you would never have thought that would happen, like. So it's I guess it's a real thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great leveler, and it's also a multi-killer, as he found out on the weekend. I famously had, I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast actually, but I had a $35,000 multi. It was a 20
Oh,
leg
wow.
multi, went down. The 20th leg went down at I can't remember if it wasn't in Utah. It was in, I can't remember where it was, maybe Mexico City or something like that. And it was like
Colorado or
the
something.
shortest price leg on the whole thing. I'd bet against Diego Sanchez at altitude. I
Oh,
can't remember
wow.
the name of the opponent now, but he ended up winning the fight. And yeah, it was a lesson learned there on betting on fights fought at
Altitude.
altitude. So
Yeah.
there
Pretty
you go. I've still
good,
haven't forgiven Diego Sanchez for that, but you know,
eh,
that's the way it goes. But yeah, we had
Yeah.
an Aussie representative on the card at UFC 278, had Tyson Pedro on sort of opening the pay-per-view card. You see Tyson's fight. He obviously blew through Harry Hunsucker in about a minute.
A minute or so. Yeah, I did. I was really excited to see Tyson back in there. He obviously only just fought maybe 8 weeks or 10 weeks ago when he come back from injury, and he did a lot of his camp out of combat. And I seen him around and seeing him train, just the way he was focused. He would get into the gym. He wouldn't talk to anyone. He was just solely focused on his job at hand while he was in the gym, and he would get out of there. And then he obviously come back, won that fight quick, and he had a real quick turnaround, and he fought again. And the Aussies and Kiwis seemed to go really good against that Hunsucker, or however you say his name. And yeah, Tyson blew him away as well. So yeah, it was awesome to see, man. I'm stoked for that guy, because he's had obviously a hard road and a bit of a hard journey there in the injuries and that. But he's just come back and smacked Tui out of the park and sort of announced himself to everyone again. So awesome for him, yeah.
Definitely, and you know, he's obviously got another quick KO win, opening up a pay-per-view on quite a big card. So, you know, I guess how do you assess, you know, Tyson Pedro's sort of standing in the division? What's his, you know, what's his potential at light heavyweight?
Yeah, he's got all the potential in the world if he can stay injury free and stay healthy and obviously stay committed and sort of dedicated the way I seen him training when he was in at combat on the Gold Coast. I think he can go like really, really far. He's got awesome grappling skills. He's got awesome striking. Yeah, I think he's just a really, really well-rounded guy, and he can go to like top five pretty easy, I reckon. Like, there's not much separating those that top 15 to top five, and then when he gets there, I think, yeah, he can sort of strive towards the top.
Definitely, and of course we had Eternal 68 on the, on the local scene on the weekend. We might sort of touch on that a little bit. Obviously,
Yep.
you know, Rod Costa was victorious in the in the main event against Michael Manu. He went one by round two guillotine choke, so he's now the, you know, the number one contender for the bantamweight title, which is held by Sean Etchell at the moment. So
Yep.
yeah, what do you make of sort of Rod Costa and the bantamweight title picture?
Yeah, so the Perth event and Rod dropping down to bantamweight, probably a really, really good move. Seeing him in his last fight out against Jack, he looked a little bit undersized, and obviously, yeah, gets the win by guillotine and sort of announces himself on that bantamweight division there. And I'm not sure when Sean's back, but yeah, if Rod's ready to fight, I'm sure Sean will fight him, and I think that'll be a great fight. See the speed and striking of Sean, and see how Rod can handle that at bantamweight.
Definitely, he looked kind of jacked at bantamweight at the weigh-in, and he looked far more ripped than what we're used to seeing Rod Costa.
Yeah, he looked good. Like, obviously, it's funny because when you come down in weight, you start to accentuate like that physique and that body shape, and you almost you weigh less, but you look bigger. It's a very strange thing. I think it's probably the right weight class for him as well. He can obviously he's a phenomenal grappler and he's a pretty good striker, and we'll see him if he's more evenly sized. I think he can go really, really well.
He also mentioned that he's open to fighting Lockjaw, Justin Van Heerden as well.
Oh, yeah.
Depending on sort of the bantamweight title picture, he said he's picking Lockjaw to win against Karn Offaly. He had some sort of choice words for Karn Offaly in the cage after the fight, but he said he thinks Justin will win and he's open to taking that sort of rematch. I guess obviously he beat Justin the first time around, so he's got that option on the table as well.
Because Rod and the Ockliff fought, right? And the other guy won, yeah?
Yeah, Karn Offaly, yeah. Karn won by a split decision. I think a lot of people would think that Rod had a case for having won that fight.
Yep. Yeah, so I guess that's where that sort of stems from, right? I seen the first fight with Justin and Rod. Obviously played out very different than what a lot of people thought. Obviously Rod was landing good shots, and obviously that's what can happen in MMA, and I think he can probably fight both divisions. He's obviously super skilled, and I guess whatever opportunity presents itself, he could take either one. So
yeah, I think he's another guy who's in a bit of a hurry, I guess. He likes to bang out his fights quick, and he wants to fight the best. So that's a good person to have on the local scene. But we had a couple of up and comers on the card as well. I don't know if you've seen much of Quill and Salkild and Dom Marfan, but it was a bit of a barn burner of a fight. Quill and Salkild looked fantastic in the end. He really kind of dominated a lot of the fight and won by third round rear naked choke. Have you seen much of sort of Quillen's work?
Yeah, I've seen a fair bit of both of those guys coming up, and they both look very, very promising. Dom over here from Compton's, he's obviously got a very, very skilled gym around him and a lot of high level athletes. And then the young fellas from Perth, right? Skillland.
Salkild, he trains at Luistro.
Yeah, Salkild. Yeah, so, and then obviously seen his last few fights on Eternal, and he's been looking really, really good. And I think there was a bit more hype around that fight than the main event. And obviously he got the job done, and obviously a dominant finish with the submission. And good to see the up and comers sort of pushing and trying to get to where they're going.
Absolutely, it's kind of nice to see a couple of up and coming fighters. Like they're two sort of highly rated prospects, and you don't often like don't always see them sort of come up against each other so early in their careers. Like Dom was only one fight into his pro career, Quillen was only having his third fight. So it's not something that you really see. Like sometimes fighters, they like to kind of try and build up and sort of maybe protect that record a little bit, but not so much with these two. So that's kind of where the hype comes from.
Yeah, I think the best thing about MMA is that people aren't protecting their records, so to say, is the boxing and the way they build them up over there. And these guys who were both highly rated, one from the East Coast and one from the West Coast, and we get to see it in there. They've both had, you said, like Dom's had one or two fights and the other guy's had three fights, and it's like, okay, let's see who's the better of these up-and-coming stars. Like, and we get to see it quite early. And then you also get to see who comes back from losing and who builds on their career and what the other guy does from winning. So it's good that I love that. That's one of the things I love about MMA is, people aren't hiding. They're fighting and they're doing what they need to do to get to where they want to go.
And like you say, it's one of the great things, like, taking a loss on your record isn't the be-all and end-all in MMA. Like in boxing, you take Quillen was 1-1 going into this fight. If he took another loss there, it's 1-2. If this was boxing, that's almost curtains, right? If you got one or two losses on your record early on in your career, it's really hard to sort of make that ground back. But in MMA, you've had some losses along the way. We know Lockjaw's had, he's got five losses on his record as well, and it doesn't really stop you from getting where you need to go.
No, that's right. It's MMA is a very, very different landscape than what the boxing is, and how they've built fighters up over there over the years. And it's I think the thing with MMA is if you fight and you're exciting and you really give it your all and you wear your heart on your sleeve and yeah, you go out there and yeah, have a crack. It's there's no losing. I don't think it's you win or you learn. And obviously from this one, I lost my fight, but I've come out with the biggest reward that I've ever had my whole career. So yeah, MMA is very different to the boxing standard.
It sure is. And I've got a fan question to sort of cover off this week as well. This week's question comes from John Kay. So thanks to John for listening and for your support, of course. John asks, what's in the water in Australian MMA? Why are we seeing a surge like we are locally and internationally at the moment?
I think it's always been here. We're fighters, and we're sort of, obviously we come from the land down under, and there's this, the world's just starting to see it now. And obviously for me, I've got this this Australian and Turkish heritage, which is we went to war against each other back at Gallipoli. So I'm built to fight, and I was born to do it. And yeah, I think now we're just really starting to get to see the fighting potential from this region. And it's obviously, we're super lucky to have guys like Rob and Alex and like Bam Bam and these guys putting us on the map, and yeah, building that want for more Australian and New Zealand fighters. And obviously, once you get your foot on the door, that's all you need. And I think we all go out there and yeah, prove that we belong with the best in the world. So.
Yeah, definitely. We're probably just catching up, right? Like you kind of touched on there, there's, you know, just take some people like Rob Whittaker and Alex Volkanovski and those sorts of guys, yep, to sort of break through and kind of pave the way. But then, you know, we've also got like a bigger platform now, like Eternal, sort of bringing more eyeballs to Australian prospects. So yeah, it's probably also just like eyeballs on this region, right? I guess the talent, like you say, and the fighting spirit was always there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's great having Eternals come so far. I fought for Eternal back at, I actually fought for Cam on his show before Eternal called Glory. So, and then that was his first Glory show. And then I fought a lot on Eternal, and having them build over the years and turn into the show what that is now. It's massive for fighters coming up, because yeah, 10 years ago, I didn't have that when I first started fighting. It was all these little promoters that would do one show every 3 to 6 months, and that was the end of it. And you never heard from them again until the next show. And now Cam and Ben are doing shows in Perth, and they're trying to get these shows going in Melbourne, and yeah, up here on the Gold Coast. And they're really giving fighters a great platform to perform on. And obviously, the production's got much better. And yeah, I think the fighters that are just starting out now are very, very lucky, because yeah, they've got it a lot easier than what a lot of fighters have had in the past. So.
And that probably drives an increase in the standard, right? Like as I guess we have more Australian fighters, you know, on in the big leagues and sort of more shows to watch, you know, then people want to participate more, right? There's more participation in the sport, more sort of athletes that would possibly go and play other sports or do nothing at all sort of come to MMA, and you know, that sort of drives up the quality of the fighters that are coming through, and in turn, I guess the quality of the training, etc.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I see these fresh guys that have just started out. They're maybe 18, 19, and they've been training for a year or so. And I'm thinking, what are these kids like? What are they on? Like, they're so good and they're so young, and they've got these such good platforms now that they can really, if they really want to get to the UFC and they want to go like be a top level fighter, it's a much easier task to be done now. And yeah, it's like other athletes, football and stuff, they're transitioning over, and you can see how good football is for transitioning into MMA. Like, Volk is a prime example. I played football when I was young. It's like that athleticness and that toughness from that sport really, really gives you a good foundation to transition over. And yeah, it's just, I think the fighters are very lucky now.
Obviously, you've been in the game for a while now, of course. So, how different was it when you were starting out in terms of training and the fight landscape?
Yeah, it was very different. Yeah, I've been fighting professionally for 13 years now. So back when Rob Whittaker tried out for the Smashers down in Sydney at the UFC, I was there trying out as well. So it's that's how long I've been training and fighting for. So just a little back history, but they chose the welterweight and the lightweight divisions for that series and no 66 or 62. So we missed out. But yeah, now it's like, it's massive. There's so much potential and so many avenues they can go down. So
there's MMA gyms on almost every corner these days. I'm sure it wasn't like that 13 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. There was probably two or three gyms on the Gold Coast and everyone was against everyone. It was this gym versus that gym and this guy versus these guys, and every local little fight show that was on, there was no interstate fights. There was no guys coming from Perth to fight guys from Brisbane and so on like we just had on the weekend. It was guys from Ipswich fighting guys from the Gold Coast and almost team versus team events. Like you look at the old, what was it? Kerry Dunn's show. There was, yeah, like the shows back then, it was so small, and it was almost everyone locally versus everyone locally, and no one was looking at the bigger picture. Like if we all work together, we can get international. And it's sort of now you see more teams working together and sort of building Saturday sparring sessions and stuff like that, and people are leveling up and getting better because of it. And yeah, way more opportunity when you train and you fight like that, and more growth. And yeah, it's come a long way. And even from a fan's perspective and eyes on the sport, that back when I was training and fighting, it was like you were looked at as like this bad person, a thug, and the sport was so bad and all this crazy, you're a cage fighter and like all this stuff. And now it's like, oh, it's the biggest, fastest growing sport in the world. And our kids are doing jiu-jitsu at 5 and 6 and they're learning self-defense, and it's got this total different aura around it now.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you see a pathway to the big leagues? Did you, you know, in the early days, did you see that, you know, this was there always a dream to sort of be able to fight in the UFC and sort of make a living from this, or was it sort of just a pipe dream in those days?
No, definitely. When I first, after I had my first fight and sort of got pushed into that, I didn't really even want to fight. I got pushed into my first fight. I had it. I ended up winning in the second round by a knockout. And then I was like totally hooked. I was like, what's that feeling? I want more of that. And then I was fully hooked. And yeah, I was going down to Blockbuster and I was hiring UFC DVDs. And that was the only way you could watch it back then. It was like, there was no fight pass. There was no streaming. There was no way you could get the fights on the weekend for free. So yeah, that's how I used to catch the fights, was go down to Blockbuster, hire the DVDs, get the old overdue fees because I wouldn't take it back in time, and then yeah, try to learn from that. But there was always, as soon as I started fighting, that was my dream. It was 100% the UFC. I've had offers to go fight on other international shows and sign other stuff, but that was never my dream, and I stayed true to myself. And it was the UFC or nothing for me. I've always been like that, and my wife's always held me accountable to what I told her, that that's all we were doing and that's all we would settle for. And yeah, we stuck to it, and maybe it took a couple more years longer than I would have liked, but yeah, we're there now. So
well, that's fascinating to sort of hear that you've kind of passed up on other opportunities and, you know, sort of stuck to the UFC. Was there ever sort of a temptation to take some of these other things that have come along, or was it just always this tunnel vision?
Nah, no temptation at all. I've probably had 3 different international offers that a lot of people do take. They get these international offers and they go, oh, I can go fight on that promotion and fight overseas, and that's close enough for them. But for me, I'm never one to settle for something that's not what I've put myself out there and worked for. So it was always the UFC, or I'm not settling for second best. it's probably made my life a lot harder and my journey a lot harder than it had to be. But yeah, we took that Dubai fight. They wanted to sign a 3-fight deal, and we talked them into doing the 1-fight deal and letting me just have that one fight and get out of there. And then obviously the middle of COVID and all the stuff played out, and then March this year sort of the world opened back up, and yeah, the UFC were on the phone and we got the Contender Series fight.
How interesting. Like, how often do you see a fighter sort of trying to negotiate less fights on a contract? That's you know, that's a fascinating story.
Yeah,
right there.
They obviously, so at the, it was 2019, I went down and had a chat with Mick Maynard at the UFC in Melbourne, Israel versus Rob, the first fight. And at that time, he was telling me how keen they were, and they were keen to work some stuff out and put a deal together. And so that was at the back end of 2019. And then we had that. I had a loss the early 2020 to Sean Ersig on Eternal. And then we sort of chatted to Mick again. He wanted me to get some fights and get some wins. And then we got the contract for the UAE Warriors, and they wanted to do 3 fights, and we talked them into one in the hopes of get that one international fight and win, and it would open that sort of avenue back up with the UFC. And we got that fight and the win, and we lost $20,000 in the getting home and all the sort of drama there. And we touched base with Mick and the UFC again, and he pretty much said, like, at the moment we're not touching anyone from Australia. The COVID restrictions and what the government's enforcing over there, if the quarantine and the rules and regulations and all this, you got to quarantine before you fly out and you got to quarantine when you get back in, and it costs this much. And he said it's just way too hard at the moment. And then so we'll sort of sat out for a bit, and there was not much even happening in Australia. Eternal kept getting cancelled and shows kept getting postponed and pushed back. And then we sort of started lining some fights up for the start of the year, and then March sort of the world opened up and my manager called me up and said, we have this fight, and yeah, let's push towards that. And the UFC said I could fight on Eternal if I wanted to, but for me it was like, I've worked this hard for this long and I've already sacrificed this much. Now I'll sit out for another 2 months and get this camp perfect and go into the Contender Series and give it my all. So that's what we did, and we come out of the contract, and yeah.
What a brilliant story. Like, you know, you like to do things the hard way, don't you? Obviously, you had your issues yeah, with the UAE yeah. Warriors there. So, you know, is there ever yeah. a time where you sort of, you know, thought about packing it in, thought, you know, this isn't going to work out?
Yeah, 100%. I'd be lying if I didn't say I thought about hanging them up. The start of the year was sort of a rough place for me. I'd been sitting around and training for a year and couldn't really get any fights. And then we chatted to Eternal and they said, oh, you're not in title contention. And I didn't really want to fight anyone that wasn't for a title. And then a couple of weeks later, I'm in title contention and they want to do the fight with, what's his name? The bantamweight champ. He was going to come back down to flyweight. So Sean they wanted Etchell. To do that. Yeah, Sean Etchell. So then I was like, okay, that was happening and they were telling me you're not in title contention and this stuff. I was like, oh, I think I'm just fucking done with this sport. Like, I've given my fucking heart and soul and I've lost all this money, and every fight on the local scene, you lose money and time from your family. And I was 32 at the time, and I'm turning 33 and I've got kids and I want to give them more in life. And I was sort of at the cusp of like, man, I'm fucking done with this sport. It's like, it's just, it's starting to take its toll. And my wife literally said to me, she said, you don't get to quit, because it's not just your dream. It's like hers and the kids' dream that they've been chasing as well, because they all put in work and time and effort and backed me and supported me. So I wasn't allowed to quit, and it was solely because my wife said that. And then I was like, all right, let's sign up for this next fight. And then, yeah, it was pretty much like, I think a week later to the day when my manager called me and said, we got the UFC Dana White's contender series. So it felt a lot like Alex Volkanovski. He's ready to quit, go back to concrete and or brick lane or whatever he was going to do. And yeah, next week the UFC call him and give him a fight. And it's pretty much how this played out for me. Just when you're ready to have enough, that it ropes you back in.
Yeah, that's it. Well, yeah, we're glad you didn't pack it in, because obviously, you know, we now get to look forward to you know, some more battles in the UFC. But you know, before then, of course, we've got episode 28 of Fight Talk Down Under to look forward to next week. Of course, yeah, we'll be previewing UFC Paris. Obviously, that'll include Tai Tuivasa, Robert Whittaker. Some Aussie representation there. Maybe some ONE Championships and boxing. We'll see how we go. Until then, let us know if you have any fan questions. Details will be, well, my details will be below here. It's at Dan Meehan MMA on Twitter. Make sure you follow us on Instagram. It's at Fight Talk Down Under. Like and subscribe, YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Fight News Australia, and iHeart Radio. I have an interview, mentioned this last week, with Deandra Martin on the Fight News Australia YouTube channel. Of course, she fights this weekend at ONE on Prime 1, so make sure you check that one out before Deandra's fight. Shannon, have you got any sponsors or anything you're sort of working on?
Yeah, I got a big group of sponsors that back me and support me, and they all know who they are, and I'm very thankful to have them on my team and helping me chase this dream. And obviously, my wife and the kids, Beck, she absolutely goes above and beyond. And yeah, the only reason I'm here is because she didn't let me give up at the start of the year. So I'm always thankful to her, and I tell her nearly every day at the moment, like, thanks for pushing me and keeping me in the game. And yeah, so all my sponsors, my team, obviously your coaches and your teammates, you can't get there without them. So yeah, thanks to everyone who backs me, and the fans, and you guys, Dan, that help promote us and push us and give us another platform to build on. Thank you as well. So yeah.
No worries at all. Well, the pleasure's all mine, mate, and thank you so much for stepping in this week for Lockjaw. And yeah, can't wait to see you do battle in the UFC.
Yeah, no worries. Give me a buzz when Lockjaw's back and we'll do it again. I gotta watch it. You never know what might stop you. Here I am.